Welcome to On Publishing from the Binary Agency. This is Alex Field.
And this is Ingrid Beck. Every week, we talk to professionals from the world of publishing. Our goal is to educate, inspire, encourage, and inform.
Let's get started. On today's episode of On Publishing, we talk with writer, teacher, blogger, podcaster, and now author Laura McCowan, who is the author of the recently released memoir, We Are the Luckiest, The Surprising Magic of a Sober Life. Full disclosure, Laura is a client of The Bindery and a friend, but she's also the first author that we're going to talk to on the podcast, at least specifically about her book. She is probably most well known for the podcast that she has done. She co-hosted two very popular podcasts. The first one was called Home, and you can go listen to those now, and that was about sobriety. And the second one, more recently, was called Spiritualish. And as I said, both of those are available to listen to right now on wherever you listen to podcasts. But Laura also runs a number of different courses, including one called The Bigger Yes, which she opens up a few times a year. And you can find out more about all the work she's doing at lauramccowan.com. This was a great conversation, Ingrid.
It was. We learned a lot. I think we heard a lot of Laura's personal journey of dreaming of being a writer and how she wanted for a long time to read a book, but the things that kind of stood in her way and what she had to overcome in order to make that dream a reality.
That was a pretty cool discovery in this conversation. And we've worked with Laura for a long time, but I didn't know that in a certain way, the writing journey and writing this book in particular, which is her first book, it was a motivator to get her from where she was and, you know, to sober.
We also talked about some of the nuts and bolts of the process, how it was working with an editor, and heard a little bit about her publishing experience, which is always helpful if you're someone who wants to write a book at some point in the future.
This is a unique perspective because she was sharing these insights as a first-time writer. In future episodes, we will talk with authors who've written many books or have several behind them. But this is really like, okay, this is what it was like going through the process, writing my book for the first time, what working with my editor was like. So I think that's a great insight already. And then she also shared very practically how she writes and how getting words on a page happened for her.
We hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks for listening.
Laura McCowan, thank you for joining us on the podcast. Obviously, we work together, so I know a little bit about you, but I wonder for those who are listening who are just now getting to know you, if you could tell us a little bit about yourself. I mean, in brief, you are a teacher, a writer, a podcaster on two very popular podcasts, Home and Spiritualish, and now you're author of the book, We Are the Luckiest, which just came out in January. So Laura, would you mind just sharing a little bit about how you got started doing some of that? And then we'll dive in from there.
I started writing very late in the game. I always wanted to write, and I had kept journals and started blogs that just like ended up collecting dust. But I didn't really start writing until I was faced with trying to get sober. And I found that writing was like the thing that was helping me the most. And I had a story to tell at that point, you know, that I really needed to tell just for myself to figure out what the hell was going on. And I started to share my work in blog posts first. And then I started getting published in a few places and things like that. Over the course of a couple of years, I started to work on a book. I really started writing in earnest around 2013, 14. So it hasn't been a long time.
Did you write when you were younger, when you were in school, or is this something that came as a result of that journey that you went through?
I mean, I did, but not formally. I've never written a piece of fiction, for example. Like, I don't even know if I can, which I'm sure you think is funny because I told you I want to write a novel.
Yes.
But we'll just laugh at that for the moment. But no, I always enjoyed writing a lot. Like, I took AP English, and I liked the act of writing. I actually even liked just the physical act of writing, you know, like writing emails. And I always would get told, like, you're a great writer. For when I was in business school, like, you would do a lot of papers, and I'd get told that. But I didn't truly consider that I would want to do it. I dreamed of that, but it seemed like something that was for other people. You know, I didn't major in English. I didn't do any sort of formal education in writing. And then I got to be, you know, late in my 30s and thought, well, that thing is past. There's no way I'm going to start doing that now. I did write, and I was a huge reader always, but not formally, not like regularly.
You probably started getting a lot of feedback as you started writing blog posts. And by the way, the stuff that you post on your social media, your Instagram and elsewhere is so inspiring and encouraging. You're writing every day. You're creating content all the time. So did that feedback that you were getting from people, did that help spur that journey along?
Oh, totally. For sure. I'm sure maybe I would have kept going, but I started to write blog posts. I mean, the problem I had too is I wasn't drawn to write fiction or short stories. I really wanted to write about my own experiences, but I had so many secrets and I was living such a lie on so many levels, but really, you know, especially with the drinking, and that creates all kinds of lies in your life. And so when I would go to write, I couldn't, because I couldn't tell the truth about anything. But when I decided that I was going to be really honest about what I was going through, even before I got sober, like I said, I had a story to tell. So I started to write those as blog posts, and then I would share them. I didn't have an email list or a subscribe thing, but I would just share them with my like friends and some of my family, or post them on Facebook sometimes. And I had one friend that I grew up with from high school, and she wrote me an email in the like early morning one day. This was many years ago. And she's like, I just finished reading all of your blog posts. I mean, there maybe were 10 or something. She's like, you have to keep writing. I don't know where this is coming from, but you have to keep going. And I woke up in a really dark place this morning, and I just sat here in this hotel room hungover reading what you wrote, and I needed it. And you have to keep doing this.
That's so powerful.
Yeah. So I did have encouragement. I also got a lot of the like concern, you know, like my family didn't really like it. I had definitely had people texting my mom and emailing my mom or calling her and saying like, is Laura okay? Like a lot of the things she's posting are really dark. And my mom saying like, maybe you don't want to do that. Maybe you don't want to share all that. Why are you sharing it? Or friends saying, cause I was going through a divorce at the time, like maybe you don't want to talk about all this cause you're not through a divorce yet. So there was a good amount of encouragement, but there was also a lot of the opposite of encouragement, I guess, concern, which I think is important to hear, because your stuff isn't always received well, or you don't get the likes that you want, or you don't get the feedback right away. I mean, I wrote for a while without it feeling like I was doing anything important.
When you started writing, Laura, about those things, those dark things that you mentioned, where were you at in your journey in terms of sobriety? And were you at the other end of that? Were you sober at that point, or were you still in the process? And then how did that change how you wrote?
I started writing about a year before I actually got sober. I started like a new Instagram account just so I could start to keep that stuff separate and post about what I was going through there. But I also, on a public blog, wrote, you know, about what was happening with me, even including things like drinking again. And I just felt like for me, I was really doing it for me. As much as I did write, I was very, you know, I didn't expose everything. I was very careful about what I shared, but I really made a point, like it was important to me to be as honest as possible without revealing other people's stories, for example. But no, I didn't wait till it was all cleaned up. Because I think it was the writing that was helping me get through it, really.
So when did you start thinking that you might have a book in you?
I hoped that I did. I didn't really know what that meant, you know, but I hoped that I did. And I knew I wanted to write a book. I had talked about writing a book for so long, even though I didn't really know what my book would be about. I just loved reading so much that I wanted to write a book. But I don't know. You know, I heard Jason Isbell, the musician, say that getting sober gave him a story to tell, and the story is still happening. I think I knew pretty quickly that I wanted to write about that. I wanted to write about my experience of getting sober, but I did have this really funny moment. I was reading Glennon Doyle's blog, like way back when. I liked her writing, and her about page said, like, I'm a recovering bulimic, addict, mother of three. She just like listed all these things, like just matter of factly, you know, and it's like, holy shit, I want to be able to do that. Mm-hmm. It was like, no, you have to actually get sober first. Yeah. To write about it. You have to, you know, you have to like get to the other side. And it was this very practical thing, almost in a way, like a motivating thing. Like you need to get to the other side of this so that you can write that story. Mm-hmm. Cause no one wants to hear this, like no one wants this story. This story isn't going to work, but it became very clear to me that I would never write a book if I didn't get so, like, if I kept drinking, that was never going to happen. And I mm-hmm. wanted that to happen more than really I wanted anything in my life, you know?
Wow. So
it was a motivator.
Yeah. I mean, I talk about that in my book about, there's a chapter called The Bigger Yes. And Augustine Burroughs says it too, in his book, This Is How, there's an essay about how to put down your drink. And he talks about the secret is to want something more than you want drinking. And he didn't think that there was anything that he wanted more than that. But it turned out that there was. And that's what was true for me. Like, it just became very stark, like a very obvious thing to me that I would never do, not just writing, but many things, but especially writing. I would never write a book if I kept drinking, and that one would not happen as long as the other was going on. And I wanted to write more than anything. I mean, I also think this is like a spiritual thing. You know, there's this quote on the Gospel of Thomas. I share this all the time because it really underscores it, and it's what changed everything. It kind of snapped everything in place for me. And it says, if you bring forth what is within you, what is it within you will save you. And if you do not bring forth what is within you, what you do not bring forth will destroy you. So there was like the actual addiction part that was killing me, but there was this unused potential too that was destroying me. And that I knew that. I really knew that. And I think that's what the writing was. Like I had this inside of me. It wasn't like a benign thing, you know, the potential. I don't think it is for anybody.
That's beautiful. In some ways, it sounds like your dream about writing and writing this book in particular really did help and have a role in that journey for you, that journey towards sobriety. For those who Laura, are going to pick up this book at Barnes & Noble and they're going to, you're going to see what We Are the Luckiest on the cover, what is the book about, first of all, if we could just do a little bit of that. And then what does that title mean? It's a very provocative and intriguing title. So maybe tell us a little bit about
that. It's a book about my story of getting sober and not the like drag out story of all the things that happened while I was in addiction, but like what happened. It's more focused around sobriety and what happened once I started to get sober, because I was very interested in that aspect of it. That part of our story is not often told. Our story as humans, you know, like we defeat the thing and then what? Because it doesn't end there. I don't think addiction is that unique or even that interesting. I think it's like one of many things. We all have a thing, right? We all have at least one thing that takes us down in our life.
Yeah.
And often many things. So divorce or illness or death or addiction or whatever it is, we all have a thing, our body issues. And it's for anyone who is trying to not face their thing and encouraging them to face it and encouraging them to look at it as an invitation, as hard as that is sometimes. And it's not in like a flowery, rosy way that I say that, or a flip way. I acknowledge the darkness of all of that. And then it's about a bigger yes, you know, like what has happened since then is beyond what I could have ever imagined. And I think that's true for everybody. I think that we're presented with these things as invitations to have a bigger life, as most people do when they're facing sobriety. I thought that was like the worst thing that could ever happen to me, having to get sober. And yeah, I thought it was just terrible. I realized at some point that I was actually lucky, one of the lucky ones to get this invitation to wake up. And so that's what the title is about.
I love the title. I've loved the title since we first started talking about this book. And I know that phrase has become kind of a charge, like a clarion call for people as they walk through similar mm-hmm. journeys, whatever their thing is, as they walk out of that thing. This is something that other people have adopted, which is very, very cool. Obviously, you were blogging for a season of time. You were writing through some of these stories. But when did you actively start writing the book? Or was it all the way along? You were thinking about the book as the end goal.
Well, I had it as a thing that I wanted to do and a thing I was working on for a couple of years before you and I talked, but I had no idea how to even go about writing a book. So I wrote lots of starts and I opened many Scrivener files and many, you know, Word docs attempting to try. I probably wrote 100,000 words that were nothing, you know, never even made it anywhere, but I wanted to write a book all along. I talked a lot of shit about writing a book for a long time. I would say I actively started working on it in 2015 and then really started to really dig into it like a year before we sold it.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I don't know if it helps to have formal training. I'm sure that it does, at least to understand. Like, I didn't know anything about voice or structure or like anything about how books are done. None of it. So I was just like, oh, it must be like stringing together a bunch of blog posts, which I had done. And yeah, it turns out it's not at all like that. I had to kind of learn all that. And I went to a lot of writing retreats and I started to connect with other authors and I started to read books differently, you know, like read them from a how did they do that type of thing. But yeah, I had it in my head all along. I would say, so people, like someone asked me yesterday, how long did it take you to write that? And it's like, oh my God, I don't even know. Like in some sense, years and years, but in reality, maybe a year, you know, beginning to end.
At some level, you have to really get intentional about that process, right? Like, I mean, obviously the life you lived, the lessons you learned, the blogs you wrote, the things you shared with people on social media, all of that goes into the writing of the book. But at some point you have to sort of sit down and say, all right, I'm going to write a certain amount of words every week or whatever the process is. How did that look for you practically? Did you have, and I know every writer is different. Some writers get up at 4 a.m. and write for 4 hours and crank out 10,000 words a day. And that might be overstating it a bit, everybody has their own process though, right? Practical side. What did you do to motivate yourself? And, you know, for those writers out there who are like, I will never write a book. I have a story to tell, but how do I get there? You know, what does that look like?
Up until 3 years ago, I had a other career at a job in marketing. I had a 15-year career and I had a pretty big job. So that was very demanding. And I traveled all the time and I was a single mom. So my schedule now is different because this is what I do, not just write. I do lots of other stuff, but I work for myself. So I have a little more command over my schedule. But at that point I was commuting to Boston every day. I was traveling a lot. And so I started waking up early in the morning to write because it was the only thing, it was the only way that it would ever happen. So I got into that practice. And for a long time, it was really only to write blog posts. But then I started using that time to quote unquote work on the book. Morning is still the time when I do it. Even now, when I have more space, it would seem, or more time in my schedule. And I just think that it's the time that works for me because the world is quiet and I don't feel like I need to be doing other things. But what really helped me was to understand practical things like this is the length of a typical nonfiction book or memoir, right? Let's just start with 75,000 words and about 10 chapters. And if you want to finish by X date, back that out and see how many words you need to write each week. I started by trying to do the write this much each day thing, and that just didn't work for me. I can't write every day. It just doesn't work that way. So I did it by week. Say, okay, this week I need to write 5,000 words total or 3,000 words, whatever it is. And sometimes that would happen all at once in one morning. And sometimes it would happen spread out over 5 days. But the week thing gave me more flexibility. And also, I learned that I spent a lot of time, this is something a lot of writers say, but I didn't really understand it. Like a lot of writing is not writing. So it would take me a while to contemplate what the chapter was or the essay or whatever I was writing. Think about it, maybe do research, do whatever, lay and stare at the ceiling, think about it, and then go about writing it. So I broke it down by week and I still write in the morning though. I had, I think, 4 months to finish my book when we signed the contract and about 50,000 words to go. So it helps so much to have a container. I think. Mm-hmm. When I first started writing the book, it was like, oh my God, this could be any length. It could be just wide open. And to have a container is what I would, what I would tell people and what I'm teaching them now is to have a container and really define what the book is about, like really, really specifically what it's about. Not this is a story about my life, or this is a story about even as broad as my recovery from addiction. Like it's much more specific than that. Mine was like, this is the story of the first 4 years of my sobriety. But I don't know. It's like easy to say that in hindsight because I had to do all the like shooting in the dark to really figure that out. I do think though that the practical side, like people think that my writing is this mysterious sort of thing that happens, and it's really a lot more practical than that.
As in just get your butt in the chair kind of a thing.
Yeah. Sarah Hapeless says like move the bricks from one side of the room to the other. It does have a mysterious element for sure, because you're creating something brand new and out of thin air, but it's also very practical and not, it doesn't feel like this mysterious thing when you're doing it. It just feels like a slog.
And it sounds like you really work to have a plan, to put together a plan for how you are going to finish it.
Yes. I think whether it's a self-imposed deadline, mm-hmm. or even better, a deadline that you get from a publisher,
right?
That meant everything to me. Sarah Hibula again said this to me, and it was like, yes, that's exactly what it is. She said, yeah, a deadline is a container for your despair.
That's great.
I was like, oh my God, it's so perfect. It is. But I knew like on April 15th, I'm going to turn this manuscript in. So yeah. It will end. This will end. So I'm a strong believer in deadlines. The other thing is too, I think I hadn't lived the ending of my book, right? Mm-hmm. Until a few years later than I thought I would. Mm-hmm. I thought first year of sobriety, I'm going to write a book. It'll take me a year. It'll be awesome. And it took me 3 years longer than that. I just hadn't lived it yet. So that's obviously specific to memoir probably, but maybe not.
No, that's really good. I think, it happens differently for everyone, right? And it happens on its own mm-hmm. timeline. And I think that's one of the mysteries of this whole thing. I love how you talked about, there's something very practical about this. There's something about just moving the bricks. We sometimes hear those mm-hmm. stories of people who they were struck with inspiration from the muse or whatever it is. And that doesn't really happen unless you're sitting in the chair and you're putting your hands on the keyboard or on the typewriter or whatever the case is for you, and you're ready and willing, yeah. right? You have to sort of sit there and start writing before anything like that can happen. And if that happens, wonderful. But it really is just about the slog, the hard work.
Yeah, it's both. I mean, I think it's like spirituality. You know, I think a lot of people think that spirituality or having a connection to, let's just say, your truest self, for people who don't have a belief in God or whatever, a connection to your truest self, that it's something that strikes you, right? And then it just stays that way. But I think of it, it's so much more practical. It's both. There are very specific things that I do now to keep the channel, practical things that I do to keep the channel clear and clean. Like I still do morning pages every morning. And all that is just, I write one pretty big full page of just like a brain dump. And I meditate, not long, 10 to 15 to 20 minutes a day. These are things that I do for my mental health, but they also are in service of my writing. And I have a basic routine, even though I am someone who says I hate routines. It's like I realized that actually created more freedom in my life, so I started doing it. So all those practical things, then when the connection is clear, then the magic, whatever it is, does happen. It can reach you. You're a channel for it. You're a container for it. You're open for it. I think you have to acknowledge both. The whole book of We Are the Luckiest felt like just work, like the entire book until the last chapter. And then something happened. I will never forget it. It was like the thing just like flew out. And I didn't know it was going to be the last chapter. I didn't know it was going to be the end, but I knew it when it was happening. And then I called my friend and I read it to her. And she's like, oh yeah, that's the end. That's the end of the book.
Wow.
Yeah. But 95% of it was just sitting there thinking I didn't know what the hell I was doing. Writing, 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 writing. I think that's the hardest part. And you can't understand it until you do it. Like you can't understand being a parent or other, singular experiences. until you actually do it, is that the self-doubt is so bludgeoning. It's so like you think you're supposed to feel better about what you're doing, or like you know what you're doing more. And it just, I've never talked to a writer who feels like that. You have to live in this very isolated container of self-doubt and withstand that.
What was the relationship with your editor like? Was there a lot of back and forth after you turned in the manuscript? How did that experience play out?
Obviously, this is my first experience, so I don't have anything to relate it to, but I found it to be, there was a really good amount of back and forth. I was afraid he was going to change my voice mm-hmm. or take certain things out that I didn't, you know, or really force the story to go in a certain direction. And it wasn't like that. He did remove a lot of my curse words.
Why?
That I was a little upset about. No,
oh, damn it.
No, I got to keep the important ones, but, we had a good amount of back and forth. I thought that editing would be, I would turn in, you know, several chapters, then work on the next ones and turn several chapters. And it wasn't like that. You know, I turned in the whole manuscript mm-hmm. and then we had a couple of rounds between me and Jason. But then after that, the proofreading process, that part of the editing process has been like, whoa, I had no idea it was so many rounds and so involved. That's been pretty fascinating. But overall, I felt like it was much better than I thought it was going to be.
Good.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't know what I expected, but.
No, it's helpful to have these super grammar ninjas come alongside you and do all those proofreading rounds or copy editing passes or whatever you want to call them. Every publisher has their own way of doing it, but usually it's three or four rounds of back and forth. And it's amazing the things they catch that, the mistakes we're all making all the time.
It's good to see that now because I will hopefully fret a little bit less about those things as I go. Like, for example, inconsistencies in the story. Like I say this once here, but it doesn't make sense because the reader doesn't know this piece of information yet. Like I didn't have to know all that. And that tripped me up for a long time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Laura, could you take us into like the book proposal process a little bit? And I'll be honest, you wrote a couple of book proposals in the process that you and I worked on together as we were getting ready to pitch mm-hmm. publishers, and your proposals were fantastic. Like you understand marketing in a way that most authors don't because you worked in that field for so long. Could you just take us into what that was like, building those book proposals and then the pitch process? What was all that like for you? Was it good? Was it agonizing? I know there's all that.
Really? You have to ask me that? I almost quit. Yeah. Oh, I remember sending you that email like, nope, I'm just not going to do this. Thanks. So the book proposal process, it's a lot of work, but I kind of liked it because it made me feel like I was working on the book. And I think mm-hmm. you kind of are as you're doing it. You really are. It forces you to think about your audience and think about what the book is about and figure out like, why do people want to read this? And what is the promise of this book? I really liked it. And I also have so much history. I mean, I was in marketing and I did proposals. So it was something that was very familiar to me. And it was extraordinarily lucky to have that background. So I liked building it. I also like visually building things. I don't know how much more. I'm sure I sound like a jerk for all the people who are like, yeah, that's great. I don't feel that
Thanks
way.
Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot.
I know that. But I also had a lot of people read my proposal. I also got my hands on a lot of proposals. So I remember there are a couple things that are accessible to people. So Daniel Laporte and Linda, I think it's Linda Silverstein, wrote something called Your Big Bad Book Proposal or something like that. And I bought that and it had tons of examples of proposals and I used that as kind of a template. And then it's a lot of work, but it was working on the book. If I think about it in those terms, I think it's helpful for people. It's not just like this agonizing extra thing you have to do necessarily. It's like, no, you're actually working on the book. Like the introduction I used for the book proposal ended up, Alex, as you know, being a lot of what I used for the introduction for the actual manuscript. And then the shopping part, oh my God, that was awful for me. So I worked in an industry that was very fast. Decisions were made quickly. Things were made quickly. That is not the case in publishing. And I did not understand that. And it was like crazy making for me. until I understood it. And then it was still crazy making, but it was like, oh, it's not bad news that you haven't heard something back in 3 weeks. It's just sort of how these things go. So it definitely required me to have a lot of patience. And then you encouraging me that, like, no, all these rejections are like par for the course. It's not bad news. And in hindsight, you know, I can see why the first proposal, it wasn't right yet. I'm glad I didn't have to write that book, It didn't end up being the book that was, I think, the right one for me to write. It's like I tell people in sobriety, like, set your timeline out for healing about like 10 times longer than you think it's going to be. Yeah. You know, you just have to take the long road. It's just fascinating to me. I was like, wait, am I entering a, like, I'm in the twilight zone because nothing moves fast. That's just how, like, and it's like a vacuum. Like, you just don't know what's going on. But that's, as far as I understand, that's just how it is.
Yeah, it is like that. And it's incredibly vulnerable. And as you said, it's agonizing along the way. But I found that so many times authors will have conversations with publishers or editors, like we did with Jason and others. And the book continues to gestate. It continues to sort of be shaped in that process. And sometimes those conversations are part of that. And sometimes it's just the time, right? The however long it takes to get to that final publisher, the book matures in some way or it changes. So it's an interesting process.
Yeah, it was very interesting. And, you know, I happened to be shopping the book at a time when sobriety, it was like a very saturated topic. And sometimes that's the case. And I definitely thought, like, oh my God, my story doesn't matter. There's too many stories like this, but I also don't think that's really ever true. So yeah, it's a totally fascinating industry. It really is.
Laura, I wonder if you could tell us, we'll pivot a tiny bit here, to some of the books you're reading. But in particular, we have this phrase on the website, one book can change everything. And I believe that for myself, I've seen that for others, whether that's personally or professionally. Well, could you tell us about a book, for you that was just instrumental in your life in some way, or changed something for you and kind of set you on a new path?
Yes. There are a few, but the one that comes to mind first is Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed.
Oh, I love that book.
Yeah. It was the time that I read it, which it usually is, you know, where the book meets you. But it was also her voice. It made me want to be a writer more than any other voice because I wanted to be able to make the connection that she made with the people who were writing the letters. I didn't really know that that could be a book. I mean, Stephen King says that writing is transmission, like you're transmitting to the reader. And I felt like that was really true with that book. Like I read it over and over again. I listened to it and it changed me. Also, just the content of it changed me. I was going through a divorce. There were things that she said in that book that I needed to hear so badly. It freed me in some ways. It saved my life. And I thought, I know I also have that in me. I don't know if that sounds egotistical or whatever. I just knew I could do that. I knew I had that in me. I wanted to use it, not even to help other people or something like that, but just to like do it for myself, like to communicate those things. I knew I had those experiences in me. So that book changed everything for me. I mean, I still think about the letters from Sugar, you know, like her responses to people and also the way she talked, the writing itself too. Mm-hmm. You know, there are certain essays and there are responses from her that just like blew my mind, changed my mind about how you could write.
Does that inform how you, I mean, because some of the things you write now, I mean, on Instagram, you have this natural way of encouraging people and saying, hey, I'm there with you. You got this, that kind of thing. Did some of that inform how you do that now? Because it seems like that you have a similar voice, but it's totally your own.
I'm sure I probably copied her more than is right for a while, but I think that's just what we do. I'm talking about that book, but there are others too. Like a fiction book that did that for me is my favorite. The History of Love by Nicole Krauss completely blew my mind, just changed my mind about how a book could be constructed and a story could be told, and that informed the way I write. No, I absolutely borrowed from her. And I think that's sort of probably what everyone does. Like you borrow from the writers that you love until you figure out your own voice.
Yeah, for sure. That's what we all do. Well, with that in mind, I mean, you seem like you're reading all the time. You're posting about books you love. Are you reading anything great at the moment?
I'm reading a few things at the moment. I am reading The Immortalists by Chloe Benjamin. It's an older fiction, older as in like, I think last year or the year before. It's really great. I've been reading a lot of fiction lately, not so much nonfiction. So I'll talk about two books that completely blew my mind recently. One is Ask Again, Yes by Mary Beth Keane. It's a novel. I'm still thinking about that book. It was so freaking good. So good. And then Three Women by Lisa Tadeo is a nonfiction book. But I read that this summer and that just blew my mind too.
I'm always reading those down. Very cool.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yes. Oh, my God. We could talk about this stuff for hours, or I could. But I thought for a while. So reading was one of the things that I lost in drinking. I lost my capacity to really get absorbed in a book. I just didn't have the attention span anymore. Like my brain was too frenetic. And I kind of thought I would never get it back. And then it started to come back in recent years. I read a lot of nonfiction during sobriety. You know, that's sort of been the way that I teach myself, heal myself, learn things. But then I finally turned back to fiction, and there's just been a run of really great books. The Most Fun We've Ever Had, I read that this summer. That was also excellent. Both that and Ask Again, Yes are family sagas, really, that last, you know, several decades, and just brilliantly done.
We have a good reading list now for the next few months, for the rest of the fall, rest of the year. Laura, where can people find you online, on social media, if they're looking to see more of your content, to see, I know you do a lot of other things other than, you know, just the book that you've written. Maybe tell us a little bit about what you're working on, where people can find you and what they can look forward to.
Yeah. So everything is on my website, which is my name, lauramccowan.com. And the primary thing I do other than writing is teach online courses. So I created one called The Bigger Yes, which is really about finding kind of your, I hate to say calling or purpose, but that's the easiest way to explain it. And that I just actually taught as a retreat too at Kripalu. So I do teach retreats. I'm a yoga teacher as well. And then I created one called We Are the Luckiest, a sobriety course that I'm teaching in the middle of teaching right now. I've taught that several times. And it's not a how to get sober course, but what to do when you're sober, how to be a human in sobriety and navigate the things that come up. And then I am also teaching a writing masterclass right now too, with a very small group. And Alex, you're teaching a class on that from a publisher's point of view. I have my editor coming in to teach a class. I have several authors coming in. So I really, you know, everything I started doing is like, way beyond my comfort zone. It was like, who am I to teach a writing masterclass with having written one book? But I also, you know, think that because of the background that I have, where I wasn't really like, I had no traditional path to becoming a writer, I'm basically created the class that I wanted to have. So doing that, and I teach retreats and workshops out in the world, but the biggest thing I do is teach those courses, and they're all online.
Well, Laura, wonderful. It was great to talk with you. Thank you for sharing some of the journey, you know, the very vulnerable process that this journey is for you and is for everyone. I mean, this putting your heart on the page, so to speak, and sharing it with the world is not an easy thing to do. I'll tell you the truth. I'm very excited to see people get this book in their hands and read it and see life change and see. I mean, I'm sure you're going to get letters from people who have enjoyed it. And I'm excited for what you're going to do next. I know there are more books for you to write. So
I'm laughing because I finally know what it is. And it's back to the original idea that we talked about. It's scary. And the process starts all over again.
That's right. More of the vulnerability and the agony. Well, shoot, we should do another phone call after this. Either way, thank you, Laura, for your time. I always love talking with you. So very much appreciated.
You too. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to today's episode of On Publishing. If you loved what you heard, don't forget to subscribe and post a review.
This episode was edited by Joey Howell, and the music was provided by Not the King. And remember, until next time, one book can change everything.